Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are taking a massive stack of legislative sources from the European Commission and diving into a document that promises some real relief for companies operating in the EU digital space, the proposed Digital Omnibus Regulation.
Yeah, this is pretty significant. And frankly, it's a necessary move. I mean, you look at the numbers. The ICT sector generated, what, €791 billion in value added across the EU in 2022?
It's a huge number.
Exactly. But that sector is, you know, kind of drowning in complex overlapping regulations. Sometimes they even contradict each other. So this proposal, it's the direct response to the industry, basically saying, look, we need some common sense here, streamline this compliance.
And this regulatory house cleaning, it isn't just tidy paperwork. We're talking about significant savings, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely. The estimates are, well, pretty big. They're looking at potential cost reductions of at least €4 billion for businesses.
€4 billion.
Over the next 3 years by 2029. So yeah, it's substantial.
Which is exactly why we're treating this deep dive as a mission, really, to figure out how they actually plan to get that kind of financial return.
Right. And our analysis suggests the Commission's tackling this complexity from three main angles.
Yeah.
So we're going to focus on, first, the big structural cleanup, basically consolidating Europe's fragmented data laws,
yeah,
what we call the data acquis.
Okay.
Second, some very targeted, almost surgical amendments to core privacy rules like GDPR and the e-privacy directive.
Uh-huh.
And third, creating a single, much more efficient way for companies to report cybersecurity incidents.
Okay, let's unpack this. Starting with that structural change, the mega merge of Europe's data laws. For years, you, the listener, you've probably had to deal with this confusing alphabet soup of regulations.
Oh, it was a compliance nightmare. Okay. Seriously, you had these key laws for data flow and access.
Yeah.
The Data Governance Act, or DGA.
Right.
The Free Flow of Non-Personal Data Regulation, the FFDR, which, you know, governed where non-personal data could be stored. And the Open Data Directive, ODD, dealing with reusing government data. The problem was they were created at different times. They often overlapped. And the definitions just didn't always line up.
So a bit of a mess. And the omnibus solution is?
Take a wrecking ball to it, basically. Well, maybe not a wrecking ball, more like smart demolition. The proposal essentially repeals the DGA, the FFDR, and the ODD.
All gone.
The separate acts, yes.
Yeah.
But it moves their substantive rules, the important stuff, into one cohesive legal instrument, the Data Act. That's Regulation EU 2232854.
Okay.
So if you're a business, the core takeaway is you read one rule book now, not three fragmented ones.
Sounds simpler on paper, but is it just a big copy-paste job, or are there genuine efficiencies baked in? Is it actually easier?
It seems like genuine consolidation and streamlining. For instance, you take that core principle from the old FFDR, prohibiting data localization requirements for non-personal data within the EU.
Right. Keep the data flowing.
Exactly. That freedom is now just codified within the Data Act. Mm. Simple. And similarly, the rules on reusing open government data and protected data, which were separate before,
uh-huh,
they're now merged into a single chapter in the Data Act. Makes the whole process much clearer.
But this Data Act consolidation, it's not just about making life easier administratively, is it? There seems to be a push to enforce fair competition, too, especially against the really big players. I'm thinking about that new charging rule for gatekeepers.
Oh, yes, that's a key piece. It's sort of an anti-monopoly strategy tucked in there. The proposal lets public sector bodies set special conditions and actually charge higher fees for data reuse, specifically to companies designated as gatekeepers under the Digital Markets Act, the DMA.
Why do that? Why charge them more?
Well, it's about preventing market leveraging, really. A gatekeeper, by definition, has huge market power, massive resources. Mm. If they can grab valuable public data sets at the same rock-bottom price as a tiny startup,
they could just dominate even faster.
Exactly. They could crowd out competition, stifle innovation before it gets going. By allowing public bodies to charge them more, the EU is trying to level that playing field a bit, keep things balanced.
Using money to ensure fairness in the data game. Makes sense. Okay, moving on from the big structural changes, let's look at some of the more targeted tweaks, the ones aimed at providing, you know, direct business relief.
Absolutely. And first off, there's a significant win here for the mid-market companies. The simplification rules that used to only apply to small and medium-sized enterprises, SMEs.
Right, the little guys.
Yeah. Those are now being extended to include small mid-cap companies, SMCs.
Okay, so bigger small companies, essentially.
Sort of, yes. And this regulatory relief applies across the whole Consolidated Data Acquis. And this is important. It also applies to the upcoming AI Act.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Let's focus on those refinements to the mandatory data sharing rules within the Data Act. Trade secrets are always the big sticking point, aren't they? When governments say, you must share data.
It's a high-stakes issue, definitely. And the omnibus proposal actually strengthens the safeguards for data holders here. They can now refuse mandatory disclosure of trade secrets, but only in exceptional circumstances.
What counts as exceptional?
The critical bit is when they can show a high risk of unlawful acquisition, use, or disclosure to third country entities, specifically entities in places with weaker IP protection than the EU.
Ah, so this is directly about protecting EU companies' secrets from leaking to competitors or states in, say, countries without strong rule of law on IP.
Precisely. It gives companies a legal out, a way to protect really sensitive IP if there's a real risk it could be misused elsewhere.
Okay, what about when the government itself asks for data? The business-to-government, B2G, sharing, that seems to be getting tighter, too.
Significantly tighter. The scope used to be quite broad, covering cases of general exceptional need.
Which could mean anything, really.
Kinda, yeah. Now, it's narrowed down to cover only specific, defined public emergencies. Think pandemics, major natural disasters, not just broad policy research.
That provides a lot more legal certainty for businesses, I imagine.
A huge amount. And, linked to that, they're also helping the smallest companies caught up in these emergencies.
How so?
Microenterprises and small enterprises are now explicitly allowed to claim compensation if they're required to provide their data during one of these public emergencies. Helps protect their financial stability when things go sideways.
Good support. Now, before we leave the Data Act, there's one very technical, but I think really fascinating, rollback. It says a lot about the EU's approach to new tech, like blockchain. They're deleting the smart contract requirements entirely.
Yes, Article 36.
Yeah.
This is maybe the most forward-looking tweak in the whole package. That article in the original Data Act imposed these essential requirements on smart contracts used for data sharing agreements, things like robustness and having a safe termination or interruption mechanism.
Okay.
And it's just gone, deleted.
Why cut it? What was the problem?
Well, the requirements were seen as legally really uncertain, and they created this massive, almost existential burden for people building in the decentralized tech space. I mean, think about it. How do you mandate a safe termination mechanism on a public, immutable blockchain ledger?
Can't. The whole point is it can't be easily terminated or changed by one party.
Exactly. The technology's fundamental nature contradicted the rule. The EU realized this was just stifling innovation in areas like DeFi, Web3. So getting rid of that article sends a clear signal. We want to foster this tech, not block it with impossible rules.
Interesting. Okay, let's shift gears. The big one for everyone, privacy. GDPR. We've lived with it for years, but we're still wrestling with cookie banners everywhere and, let's be honest, quite a bit of legal uncertainty.
Yeah, the foundation of GDPR is generally seen as solid, but the implementation details, the practicalities, they can be tricky, especially for smaller firms. So the omnibus proposes some targeted amendments just for legal clarity.
Like what?
Well, one really critical clarification is around the very definition of personal data.
How are they clarifying that?
It makes clear that information is not considered personal data for a specific company if that company doesn't have the means reasonably likely to be used to actually identify the person.
Meaning?
Meaning if you hold genuinely pseudonymized data and you realistically have no way to re-identify individuals from it, then the full weight of GDPR compliance might not apply to that specific data set for your organization. That's huge clarity for data processors, for data science teams.
That would certainly help teams working with large data sets. They also tackled sensitive data, Article 9, didn't they?
They did. They refined the protection for special categories of data. They narrowed the scope slightly, focusing on data that directly reveals sensitive info like race, health status. It's about aligning with proportionality.
But still protecting the really critical stuff.
Absolutely. They explicitly maintained the high protection level for genetic data and biometric data used for unique identification. No change there.
And crucially, what about AI? How does the omnibus address GDPR in the context of artificial intelligence development? Because AI needs vast amounts of data, often personal data.
Right, this is that constant balancing act. Fundamental rights versus innovation speed.
Mm-hmm.
The proposal clarifies that processing personal data to develop and operate AI systems can potentially fall under the legitimate interest legal basis. That's Article 6.1 of GDPR.
Okay, using legitimate interest could speed things up for AI developers compared to, say, getting explicit consent for everything.
It could, but, and this is a big but, it's not a free pass at all.
What are the conditions?
It's strictly dependent on the company putting appropriate safeguards in place. really rigorous safeguards. That means things like strict data minimization, proving necessity, and critically giving people an unconditional right to object. They can say, nope, don't use my data for training your AI.
So it offers a pathway, but with strong guardrails still in place.
Exactly. Speeds things up potentially, but keeps privacy protection central.
Now let's talk about the everyday annoyance, the thing we all hate. I swear, every time I open a new website, it's click, 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 manage preferences, reject all, save settings. Sometimes it doesn't even work. Consent fatigue is real.
Oh, that repetitive clipping is the perfect example of the problem. The core legal issue was this kind of dual regulation. You had the e-privacy directive governing putting cookies on your device, and then GDPR governing the data processing afterwards.
Another fragmented mess, just like the data Aquis was.
Precisely. So the solution is alignment. The proposal says processing personal data on and from your terminal equipment, your phone, your computer, should now be governed only by GDPR, one set of rules.
Okay, that simplifies the legal side. But the really clever bit seems to be the plan to kill the banners through automation, right?
Automation is absolutely the key here for consumer relief.
Yeah.
The proposal essentially paves the way for standards bodies, technical groups, to develop standards for automated and machine-readable ways for you to indicate your choices.
Like a setting in my browser.
Exactly. Think of it. Your browser, or maybe your operating system, could send a signal saying, this user refuses all non-essential cookies and objects to direct marketing. And websites would then be legally obliged to respect that signal automatically. No more clicking.
That would be revolutionary. Moving the choice from every single site visit to one single setting I control on my device.
It's a monumental shift, potentially. Once those technical standards are finalized and published, controllers, meaning websites, will get a 6-month grace period. After that, they must respect those automated signals. It puts control back with the user and should kill off that click farm experience.
There's a huge but here, isn't there? A massive carve out for one particular sector.
There is a very significant exception. Media service providers and news websites, basically, as defined in the European Media Freedom Act, they would not be obliged to respect these automated consent signals.
Why exempt them?
The justification given is the importance of advertising revenue for independent journalism. It acknowledges that many free media outlets rely on that ad income to operate.
Okay, I understand the justification funding journalism is vital. But let's think practically. If I set my browser to reject all, but then I visit all the major news sites, which is where a lot of cookie activity happens, and they don't have to respect my choice, how much difference does this automated system really make in practice?
That is the million-euro question, isn't it?
It feels like a major compromise. Does it undermine the whole point?
It's definitely the central balancing act the commission is trying to pull off. They're gambling, perhaps, that the streamlining and banner reduction elsewhere will provide enough relief, even with this big media exemption. It's certainly going to be a point of friction and something to watch very closely as this moves forward.
Definitely. Okay, finally, let's wrap up with administrative efficiency. Reporting. We talked about fragmented laws. Fragmented incident reporting is another pain point for businesses, I assume.
Absolutely. That's where this report, once, share many idea comes in through something called the single entry point, or SEP.
SEP.
Right now, imagine you have a cyber breach and personal data is involved. You might have to report the exact same incident, maybe with slight variations, to potentially 3 different regulators under 3 different laws. NIS2 for cybersecurity, GDPR for the data breach, and DORA if you're a financial institution.
Triple the paperwork, triple the costs.
Precisely. So what the ESA does is create a single online interface managed by ENISA, the EU's cybersecurity agency.
Uh-huh.
Companies can go there, submit their incident report once, and it fulfills their obligations across all relevant laws simultaneously. One submission, job done. It moves compliance from fragmented and manual to unified and digital. This is a core part of how they expect to get those EUR 4 billions in savings.
And as part of that efficiency drive, they're actually giving companies a bit more time for GDPR breach notification.
Yes, that's right. The proposal extends the deadline for notifying GDPR data breaches from the current 72 hours to 96 hours.
96? Why? Isn't the whole point of the 72-hour rule to force rapid action? Does extending it slow things down too much?
That's the debate, of course. The commission's argument is that forcing a potentially rushed, maybe incomplete notification at 72 hours often leads to inaccuracies. Companies then have to submit corrections later, which adds more burden for everyone. They argue that allowing a slightly longer period, up to 96 hours, for companies to properly investigate and verify the scope of the breach before reporting through the new EC will actually lead to better quality, more accurate initial reports. A net positive for clarity, they say, without unduly compromising the response itself.
Okay, I can see the logic, even if it feels a bit counterintuitive initially. And just to complete the legislative tidy up, one regulation is getting kicked out entirely.
Correct. The Platform to Business Regulation, EU 2019-1150, is being fully repealed.
Why is that one going?
Basically, its job is done. Its provisions, aimed at fairness and transparency for businesses using online platforms, have largely been overtaken by the newer, much more comprehensive Digital Markets Act, DMA, and Digital Services Act, DSA. Keeping the P2B regulation would just create overlapping rules, more confusion. So removing it further simplifies the overall digital rulebook.
So what does this all mean when you put all these pieces together?
Well, this digital omnibus, it really signals a profound shift in Europe. Mm-hmm. Structurally, you've got the Data Act becoming this powerful central hub, pulling together years of fragmented laws.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge. And administratively, the single entry point for reporting fundamentally changes compliance, moving it from manual repetition to automated unification. The amendments themselves are quite technical, surgical even. They're calibrated, the Commission insists, to maintain Europe's high standards for fundamental rights, like privacy. But they're very clearly aimed at boosting legal certainty, making life easier for businesses, making the EU more competitive. And those potential savings, that EUR 4 billion figure, that's the number they're banking on to prove it works.
The drive for efficiency, for cost reduction, it's undeniable here. And for you, the listener, maybe the biggest tension to keep an eye on is that conflict we talked about in privacy, that shift to automated machine-readable consent signals. It could be a game changer for user control, for ending cookie banner fatigue.
It really could.
Yet that big exemption carved out for media outlets, even with the justification about funding journalism, it creates this fascinating crack in the system. So here's the thought to mull over. If the websites you probably visit most often, the news sites, are exempt from respecting your automated privacy settings, will enough people even bother enabling that feature in their browsers? The success of this whole machine-readable privacy dream really hinges on widespread adoption, on it actually working conveniently for users. And that major exemption could well define the practical limits of its effectiveness. That's the conflict, the balancing act, that'll likely shape the future of digital consent in the EU.